Hi, welcome back to the Better Know a Lawyer podcast. This week, I'm talking about advocacy. I'm giving you five rules that I use when I'm arguing in front of somebody else. I hope you enjoy it.
Thanks for tuning in. Host Noah Weil is a licensed attorney admitted to practice in Washington State and the Federal Court of the Western District of Washington. Some guests on this program may be licensed attorneys as well. However, the discussion on this podcast is intended to be informative only and is not a substitute for legal advice for your particular situation. The information may be right or may be wrong. Changing laws and the laws of individual states mean the information presented here may not be accurate. But regardless, and this part is important, neither Noah nor any guest here is your lawyer. If you need a lawyer for your individual situation, you should consult and retain your own attorney.
This is Noah Weil, and this week I'm talking about advocacy. As an attorney, my job is basically all advocacy. I am representing people. I'm representing my clients for their needs. I am talking to a jury about why they should be let off and get a not guilty verdict. I'm talking to judges on why they should suppress a breath test or release my client with little bail. It's a really important part of lawyering. And it's important for other jobs, too, like domestic violence or medical rights or human rights violations. I think advocacy is really noble. I realize I'm biased when I say that, but I think putting yourself out there for somebody else or somebody else's cause is a noble thing to do. For whatever reason, that person can't represent themselves, and so they turn to somebody that they trust to represent their interests as best as possible. That is what a lawyer does, and good lawyers are good advocates. This week I'm going to talk about some rules I use for advocacy. I never thought of them as rules until I started putting together this week's podcast, but these are rules that I hold myself to that I think make me a better advocate. If you are interested in advocacy in any realm, be it the law or something else, I think these rules will work for you too. Rule number one for good advocacy is to be an actual advocate, not a supplicant. And I'll explain what I mean by that. When I am advocating for a person, when I'm asking somebody who has the power to make a decision to do something, I'm not on my knees. I'm not begging for a favor or horse trading or a quid pro quo. Advocacy is about explaining why your position is the correct position, why there's no other answer but the answer that helps your clients or your cause. When lawyers talk, it's not about who can insult the other person more or who can beg more, or who can bribe more. It's an intellectual thing. Why does the law say your request is the right result? Now, it's not always logic. Sometimes it's emotion. If you're talking to a jury, I definitely use emotion. I talk about why an incident occurred or the person's life. There's a lot of ways emotion can be very persuasive and it's very appropriate to use in the right situation. When I'm talking to a judge about sentencing, which was an earlier podcast, I definitely use emotion. Is this a good person? What have they done with their lives? What are they going to do with their lives? This is all something that a lawyer uses in their arsenal for advocacy. But it ultimately comes back to why is what you're asking for the correct result? Why should the person who's making the decision go with you? You want them to not only make your choice, make the decision that you think is correct, you want them to feel good about the choice. You don't want them to agonize about it. You want them to know there's no other option but to go with what you're asking for. When it's done really well, you get your win, and the person, judge, jury, whatever, feels really good about giving you that win. They feel like they worked with you to accomplish the right result, that justice was served, or compassion was executed, or something that lets them go home and think about your case and say, I made the right call, and I'm very comfortable with this decision. If you are an advocate or thinking about advocacy or have a cause you feel strongly about, think about your arguments in the way that the person who's making that decision, whether it's giving you a grant or choosing your bid over somebody else's or whatever, why, what you can say to them to let them know that the decision to go with you is the right one, that they can sleep comfortably at night knowing they made the right call. It doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's a close call and you won by the skin of your teeth, but that's ultimately the goal. It is not just begging or cajoling. It's for working together with the decision maker to achieve the ultimate correct result. My second rule is focus on your goals and your duties. I work with law students sometimes. I judge mock trials or mock appellate arguments. And the number one mistake these law students make when they're arguing their cases to these fake judges, me and other people, is they don't specifically say what they want. They'll start off by saying, Mr. Jones had a bad stop. You know, he was stopped because he was black. And then the cops planted evidence. And in jail, he didn't get a lawyer right away. And all these things that are legally interesting and good to talk about. But what I don't know is, what does the lawyer actually want? What they should say is, Mr. Smith should get a new trial, and here are the reasons why. Or Mr. Smith should have his case dismissed, and here are the reasons why. Explaining what you want in the beginning lets everything that comes after it make sense. It's relevant. It clarifies why giving you what you want is the right decision. But the second important part of this is to remember who your client is. Remember that you as a lawyer or as an advocate serve a client, serve their needs over your own. This can come up in a few different ways. I've seen lawyers, and I'm sure you have too, where it seems like the lawyer makes the case about them, about their ego. They'll go on TV or do something with the media that might negatively impact their case. Maybe they'll talk about evidence that should wait till trial, or maybe they'll make promises they can't keep down the road and they lose credibility, which we'll talk about more in a second, but something would cause somebody to think that the case is a means to an end for the lawyer, and the lawyer isn't really representing their client's interests. I think this doesn't come up too often, but of course the lawyers who do this are in the news, so you see them more often, which is maybe their goal. Ultimately, a lawyer serves his or her clients, and everything the lawyer does for the case should be to the benefit of the client. Certainly, the media can be a tool, and it might backfire. But just because a mistake was made doesn't mean that you weren't trying to serve your client. It's when the lawyer does things he or she knows is good for the lawyer and not good for the client that you have real trouble. And I'll give you a very specific example for myself. I have an appeal I'm arguing next month, and the opposing counsel messaged me and said, I'm double booked on the day we're arguing our appeal, and do you have any problem changing the time we're arguing? This is a common request among lawyers. It's a professional thing. Schedules change. And I said, yeah, that's fine. We can do it later in the day or, you know, maybe a few days out. And we talked to the judge, and she said, unfortunately, the next date after your guys' scheduled date is 3 weeks away. So if you guys are fine with that, I'll change the calendar and no problem. Now I know that it's courteous to the other side to be willing to change your dates. And again, this happens pretty commonly in the legal system. It's professional courtesy. I've asked for changes of dates before. People have asked me for changes of dates before. It's fine. But the problem in this case is that my client is in jail, and his appeal is to get out of jail. So if I push the appeal date back 3 weeks, that's three more weeks he might have to serve in jail that he wouldn't otherwise have to. And that's a problem, because while the judge would, I'm sure, appreciate the lawyers agreeing and opposing counsel would appreciate me being amenable, I don't have a duty to them. My duty is to my client and his best interest. I was willing to give a little bit, change the time, go a few days extra, because frankly, if that was available, the judge would do it even if I didn't agree to it, and I would just look silly arguing about that. It's just not really done in the system. But past that, I've got a good faith reason to object to it, to say I can't agree to that, and it's for my client. And I said that clearly. I said, I'm sorry, I just can't agree to something that far out. And ultimately, the judge found another time slot, and there's no problem, but no one said anything. People understand. If my client is in jail, my goal is to get him out of jail. That is why the appeal exists, and that's my ultimate goal here. So remembering your clients, remembering what they need you to do, is a really important part of lawyering. Sometimes ethical situations come up, conflicts of interest, and this was advice I got back in law school. Remember your clients, remember your duties to your clients, and you'll be able to navigate a lot of ethical scenarios. The lawyers that get in trouble with ethics usually threw their clients under the bus in some way, and it's just not done. It's just not supposed to be done. Good advocacy, good lawyering requires you to remember who your client is and what they need. My third rule is to know the issues. In the law, there are plenty of things a lawyer can argue, some more effective than others. A good advocate will figure out what's actually important. Some issues are errors, but they don't have any value. I could say that the police officer should have read him his Miranda rights, 10 seconds earlier, and it might be true, but no one's going to do anything about it. No one's going to throw out the case because he was off by 10 seconds. That's a weird example, but things like that, things that are so minimal, I can't raise a big fuss about because the judge is going to say, you're right, that wasn't correct, but what you're asking for, like the case being thrown out, isn't warranted on this minor error. Now, if the police officer didn't read his Miranda rights at all, that's a reason. That's to throw it out. Or if the police officer stopped a car because the guy was black, that's something to throw out the case. So if I am going to make an argument to a judge on why the case should be thrown out, I need to focus on what's the important thing, what's actually going to succeed for my client. When I write a brief or prepare an argument, outline an argument, I look for how to make it as tight as possible, how to make it as short as possible. I know some people, and I've talked to them, have this belief that lawyers love to talk and love to hear themselves talk and pontificate and all these things that let them speak on end for hours upon hours. Basically, everything's a filibuster. There's probably lawyers like that, but I don't think they're very effective. If you have two good points and four bad points, and you argue them all, how is the decision maker going to know what they should be listening to? They're going to lose attention. People don't have the mind space to focus on six distinct points, some of which are garbage and some of which are really important for your case. A good advocate knows what needs to be argued. There's a classic example in jury arguments when you go in front of a jury and the weak lawyer will say, my client wasn't there, or he was there, they didn't hit anybody, or he was there and he hit somebody, but it was in self-defense. For any of those reasons, you should come back for not guilty. This is all technically true. A jury could find not guilty on any of those reasons, but it sounds really weak, doesn't it? He wasn't there, or he was there, but he didn't hit anybody. It's silly. If you have a case where it's the wrong person they arrested, which happens, then that's your case. Argue that case. If your case is self-defense, which certainly happens, argue that case. You need to pick what you are going to argue to the jury, and that's your case. You don't get to just throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and see what sticks. It's weak. It looks like you don't know what you're doing, and it's not going to work. It ultimately doesn't serve anybody because you're just going to talk, people will listen politely, and then they'll decide against you. It's a craft, and there's guesswork involved. Do you know what's important? Do you know what this judge cares about? Hopefully you've done it long enough where you can talk to other people about it, but it's still an important part. Editing down to what's actually matters and then pushing that as hard as possible, that's the essence of good advocacy. The next rule is know your audience. I just said, what does the judge care about? Believe it or not, different judges care about different things. Different juries care about different things. If I have a jury of 12 men, or I have a jury of 12 women, I might make a different argument. I know that sounds like stereotypes, but it's some information, and I think it's crazy to ignore different life experiences for people. If I have a jury of 12 black people, if I have a jury of 12 white people, it's a good guess that they've had different life experiences. And acknowledging that different experience and discussing how it's relevant for the case is important. When you're selecting a jury, you go through a process called voir dire, which is talking to potential jurors, finding out their biases, their life histories, where they've worked, criminal histories, whether they know people in law enforcement, whether they've been the victims of crime, et cetera, to get a sense of biases or proclivities or something that will help you know more about how they'll do on a jury. You usually don't get a whole lot of time for this, depending on the seriousness of the case, but I can tell you, you never have enough time. No matter how much time the judge gives you. If the judge gave you a week to talk to these people, you'd still want 2 weeks or longer. But you get a sense of it. The interesting thing about voir dire is that you will ask questions that are somewhat related to the case. Like if it's a DUI, you can ask people how they feel about drunk driving. And people start talking about drunk driving, how that affected them. Maybe they got stopped for a DUI, that kind of thing. But what you've done is you've started priming the jury. You've started talking about these issues, and you might get very specific. When you get to closing arguments, when you're asking the jury to come back guilty or not guilty, you can still use what you talked about in jury selection, in voir dire. And I've done this plenty of times to really good effect. I've said, do you remember back in jury selection, we talked about Mr. Smith and how the police officer didn't do a very good job investigating the case? Well, guess what? We have another situation where the police officer didn't do a good job investigating the case. I know my audience because I've helped craft the audience. People who have a closing argument that they stick with no matter what the case or no matter how much time has passed, I think they're missing a lot of opportunities. I'm always crafting. I'm always editing. I'm always revising. Sometimes too much. I'll be honest, this isn't the first time I've recorded this episode. I didn't like the first one, so I scrapped it. Here's another one. But being able to reflect on your work, reflect on who's listening to it, is really crucial when you're trying to be persuasive. When I'm in a new courtroom, or when there's a new judge on the bench, I talk to other attorneys who have been there before, and I say, what does this judge care about? What should I be acknowledging for this judge so he or she will give me a fair shake and will know that I care about the same things they care about? I was in court today, and my client had missed a court date. This particular judge, I knew from past experience, hated when clients missed court dates. She really wanted a good reason why this person missed it. Turned out she was in the hospital. So I found those records, I got the information, and I was able to tell the judge, look, you know, this is the purpose why, this was the reason why this person missed a court date. Don't throw the book at her, she's taking this seriously. And it worked. I got a good result. The judge appreciated learning that information that I was able to give her. It takes work. You know, it's a case study in humanity. or just building a book of knowledge about courtrooms, but having that insight into your audience lets you make the best argument possible, connect with that audience, and knowing how to talk to them most effectively is how you get them to agree with you. My last rule for advocacy is credibility. You have to maintain your credibility. If you are perceived as dishonest or sloppy, then they're not going to believe you for two reasons. One, they're not going to believe you what you say about why your case is correct. And two, they're not going to want to believe you. They're going to look for every reason to go against you. So how does one lose credibility? You lose credibility when you lie, obviously, but you can also lose credibility when you just don't say the complete facts. No case is perfect. If it was, they wouldn't be going to trial. So your case probably has some issues, and this is true both ways. If you go up in front of the jury and say, there's absolutely no chance you can find this person guilty, they're 100% innocent, there's no possible doubt, there's no case they can put on, blah, 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 you just totally oversell your case. What happens when they put on a witness that says, this person committed a crime? You look ridiculous. You look not credible. And then the jury is going to say, well, if he was exaggerating at best about that, what else is he exaggerating about? How can we believe anything else he says? When you go in front of the judge and you say, this person missed a court date because they were in the hospital and it turned out they were in jail, you know, somewhere else for stealing a car, you look ridiculous. It's an ethical violation to lie to a judge. You don't have to tell him everything. If your client says, I missed the court date because I was in jail stealing a car, it's probably a public record, but you don't have to say to the judge, hey, you should know that my guy's a car thief. You can just say, I don't have any information to offer. Totally allowed to say that. You don't have to, and you shouldn't, disclose what your client tells you. But if you're going to tell something to a judge, it better be the truth. If you lose your reputation in a court, you know, you're basically done. There's a lot of informalities. I talked about that hospital visit before. I got some records, I got some information, but if I didn't have the credibility in the court that I did, what I provided probably wouldn't be enough. The judge would probably say, I need some more things on letterhead, I need some phone numbers so I can follow up myself to make sure that this is all true. And incidentally, your client's going to stay in jail until we check this out. Lawyers that don't have credibility in the court lose vastly more often than lawyers who win. They just make it such an uphill fight for them. An ethics professor of mine said, no case is worth going to jail for. And he's right, of course. But what that means is, as a lawyer, you have an opportunity to do the correct thing or do the incorrect thing. You might have access to evidence. You could destroy. This is a crime. But, you know, if you don't get caught, your case is probably better, right? No case is worth it. Never, never, never. Even if you don't get caught or even if people only suspect but they can't prove it, once your credibility takes that hit, you will have a hard time, maybe an impossible time, for all your clients in the future. It's a small community. Word spreads really fast. When there's lawyers who cut corners or cheat or lie, people know about it, and they don't trust them with clients. They don't get referrals from other lawyers, and judges do not give them a break. Quite the opposite. I've had clients who have asked me to break the rules. I don't blame them for that. Their lives are at stake, their livelihoods, their freedom. And they said, hey, what if you didn't tell the truth here? What if you fudged things? Or what if any number of things? And I tell them very cleanly what I just said. I'm not going to risk my law license for you. I'm not going to jail for you. But anything within the rules, of ethical conduct, 100%, I work for you. And within that framework, I will do everything in my power to keep you out of jail and to get the best result possible for you. If that's a problem, that I'm going to be within the rules, then, you know, maybe a different lawyer is a better fit. But know that we're holding their feet to the fire, the government, because they were sloppy. They didn't play by the rules. We're not going to go down that path. We have the justice on our side. We have honor on our side. We're not going to throw that away. Our case would get worse. It probably wouldn't work. And ultimately, we don't need to do that. I've had that conversation with a few clients, and every single one of them said, I understand. I appreciate that. I'm going to stick with you, and let's see where this case goes. And usually it goes okay. But I can tell you that even if it didn't go well, it still would go worse if I didn't have the credibility to back up my statements. There's no good trade ever when you give up your credibility, when you give up your reputation. There's nothing to gain from it. It's just sand in your fist. It's just ephemeral. People who give up their credibility for a case, for a client, they don't have anything to show for it. It's unlikely to help their case, and it's not going to do them any favors for the rest of the cases, for the rest of their career. It's never worth it. Well, that's it for this one. Those are my 5 rules of advocacy. I'm always learning, I'm always refining, and then if I have 5 more rules, I'll probably share them in a future episode. If you liked what you heard, please let me know. You can leave a comment on the webpage for this podcast or send me an email directly. All the information's on my website. If there's a topic you want to hear about in the future, I'd certainly like to hear about that. Until next time, thanks for listening.